You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 33, Rin. Rin packed her own bag the next morning. She had dismissed Mossit to go tend to the prince, and so she was alone in her rooms. The cream walls and wood floors were peaceful and lonely. She did not have time to say goodbye, she told herself. Not if she wanted to leave Altair without any fussing, fighting, or further proposals of marriage. She tucked the necklace into her pack. When she had finally found it wrapped around Seraphina's neck in the cave, she pocketed it without any hesitation or thought. And now that she had what she came for, it was time to go. A knock sounded on the door, and when Rin opened it, it was Travok standing in the hall, looking like a man with a question. "What are you doing here?" she asked, too tired to pretend to be polite.
I came to check on you,
he said, looking shocked that she had even opened the door.
Really?
She laughed.
Yes, really,
Travok snapped, wrinkling his nose as patches of red appeared behind his beard.
You are such a bad liar,
Rin sighed, stepping back from the door and returning to the other room, continuing to pack. Travok followed her.
You are leaving.
No time like the present, and I did not want to wait around for you lot to be ready.
Hmm,
he grumbled, fidgeting with a brush on the vanity, eyes drifting from his hands to the mirror and back again.
Taking any souvenirs?
Do not worry, only what is rightfully mine, Rin said, closing her satchel and tightening the straps. When are you heading off? I would have thought that you would have been anxious to get back to guarding those grand libraries of Durandir.
Oh no, the guard is responsible for protecting the crown. The librarians are the ones who protect Durandir's histories,
he replied, opening a drawer before strolling around the room, looking like a man killing time. I see, Rin said, folding her arms and watching the wizard look at everything but her. And how is Seraphina?
Oh, fine, I think. You know how—
Travok, why are you here? He stopped and ran a hand over his face, mouth going slack as his eyes traveled from Rin to the pack at her side and back again.
Why have you not told her about what I did, almost did?
He asked at last. Rin blinked at the man who had almost been an assassin. He looked so young, like a child who was too scared to give an apology. She had no answer for him. Truthfully, Rin had almost forgotten the mad look in Travok's eyes that night, or how he had held a ball of force to the back of his queen's head. However, even now that she had been reminded of his misdeeds, she already knew she was not going to say anything, and she was not entirely sure why. She supposed the answer had to be because she liked the look of him. Rin knew he did not like her. The man had not been shy about that. She also knew that he could be dangerous if his sanity was pushed too far. But for some reason, it was hard for her to believe that this man, the man that had bent down to help a serving girl in an inn, the man who had sung stories so beautiful it made her forget who she was, the man who had towered over her and held that impossible blinding force at bay, could be dangerous. And Rin could not let a man like that be thought of as a traitor.
I'm not sure. Do you think I should? She smirked.
His face fell, all the creases of concentration and concern smoothing out into one blank look of panic. I'm not going to tell her, Travok, Rin sighed, rolling her eyes. It would not be fair. We were all feeling the effects of the rift, and Zithril pushed you past your limit. You fought valiantly in the cave. You redeemed yourself. He was quiet as he looked at her, unnamed thoughts and feelings flashing behind his eyes. Was that guilt or shame she saw there? Fear or sadness?
Thank you,
he said at last.
I.
The door banged open and Brenora marched into the room. She glared at Rin before asking, Have you found it?
Not yet,
Travok answered, eyes once again landing on Rin's bag. The queen followed his gaze, stood over Rin, and threw open the bag to reveal the dainty silver lace of the necklace within.
Damn it, Rin,
she swore before tossing the necklace to Travok and commanding, "Check it."
"That's mine. We had a deal," Rin shouted.
Travok pulled the silver strand slowly through his hands, pinching the gem between his fingers as he closed his eyes. Then, after a breath, he nodded. Brenora bared her teeth.
"Damn it," she repeated. "You know how this looks. You must know how this looks."
"Like you are about to go back on our bargain?" Rin glared at Brenora as she stormed from the room.
"Secure her," the queen shouted over her shoulder before she reached the hall door.
"Do not touch me," Rin said, snatching her hand away and chasing after Brenora.
Do you expect me to just ignore everything?" Brenora shouted, wheeling around to face Rin. "What you know, the languages you can read, the spellwork, that was found on Seraphina's neck," she said, jabbing a finger at the necklace still dangling from Trevok's hands.
"Don't let her out of your sight. I'll get the others. We're leaving now."
The door slammed shut, and Rin felt cold clamp down on her wrist. She looked and saw a silver-blue manacle shining next to her worn rope.
"They're eye shackles,"
Travok said, fastening the other to his own hand.
"If you try to use any magic..."
"I know what eye shackles are," she snapped. "What I do not know is why you are doing this. If this is about me taking something from Altair or something that belonged to the princess, that should be between me and Zithril. He should be..."
She trailed off as she watched Travok fidget with his nails, trying not to look at her. Puzzle pieces started to pull themselves into place.
"Most diplomatic missions do not end with the death of 2/3 of the royal family," she said, watching Travok closely for his reaction. His face was granite as he stared at the wall behind her and grumbled,
"That is not why we went to Altair."
Rin nodded. "Probably," she agreed.
"But Brenor only let me in the party after I mentioned the necklace."
Travok said nothing. His hand traveled up to pinch the bridge of his nose, his fingers pushing over his eyes and running through his hair. Rin swallowed hard and went on. Her throat suddenly felt very dry.
"You went to Altair looking for the necklace."
"No, not exactly,"
Travok stammered, but Rin pressed on, her voice like a sleepwalker as she continued to put the pieces together.
"We both went to Altair looking for the necklace, and we found it around Seraphina's neck, in the middle of a working meant to split open reality. And then I stole it."
History clicked together in her head with those words. It explained so much. It answered so many questions. It was simple and obvious, and Rin was an idiot for not seeing it sooner. Why Brenora had been so willing to let her join them in traveling to Altair. Why, in the grips of his insanity, Travok had accused her of being like Seraphina. Why, after showing her hand, she was being arrested instead of rewarded.
As the reality of her situation came crashing down on her head, fear took hold of Rin's heart and squeezed. Her legs started to shake, and she grabbed onto Travok's shirt for balance.
"Ataya," Rin blurted out as she pulled at his lapels. "That is the name of the woman who hired me. It is not her real name, but she lives in the upper district of White Silver, just below the palace. She's of Elvish ancestry, tall, brown hair, dark hazel eyes. Please believe me. I am a liar, but I am not lying about her."
All she could see was his eyes, eyes that stretched on forever like storm cloud skies. She felt a sob catch in her throat, and those eyes almost pulled it from her.
"Would you do it again?"
he asked.
"Would you stop me like that again?"
"Would I do?" Rin asked, shaking her head, thrown by the question.
"Would you stop me?"
he hissed, eyes flicking over her shoulder to the door.
"If I got like that again, would you stop me?"
"Without hesitation," she said, and immediately regretted it. If there was one thing a person should not do when they were in custody for crimes against the mortal plane, it was admit that they would be willing to harm those responsible for her arrest. But it was too late.
"Rin,"
Varys' voice came from behind her. She turned, and there the golem was, tall and sad, shoving his hands into his pockets, as Bernora stood burning by his side. No, Rin said, throwing up her hands. No, listen.
Don't make this harder than it has to be,
Varys sighed.
No, no, you don't understand, she said, shaking her head and backing into Trevok. Put her out, Bernora commanded. No,
Rin screamed, but it was too late. All it took was Varys reaching forward and putting a hand on her shoulder, and the fight was done. The room swayed, her legs buckled, and her body was filled with an insatiable, buzzing hunger. Then Rin was falling, down, 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 past the floor, and into the black. Chapter 34. Rin. Rin awoke to the smell of the sea in a room that was not pretending to be anything else but a cell. Her head pounded, and she was rabid with hunger. She looked at the straw and the stone of the floor she was stretched out on and took stock of her surroundings. Her clothes were gone, replaced with a simple linen smock. She had been cleaned and cared for. The room, though Spartan, was also clean, with a bucket to relieve herself in and a tray with bread and water by the door. Rin crawled to the food and tore into it with both hands, pressing her back into the wall and staring out the arrow-slit window as she chewed. She would bet the bread and water she was in White Silver. She would know the smell of its air anywhere. At first, Rin took this as a good sign. She knew White Silver. She knew which judges owed her favors, and the hand she would have to grease to ensure a speedy trial. Besides, this was how you treated a captive with whom you wanted to remain on good terms. They wanted information, and that was fine with her. She would personally march them to Atea's front door and ring the bell if that meant she could go home. Yes, she would lose the funds she was depending on, and her reputation might take a hit if it got out she shared secrets with the authorities. But reputations could be rebuilt, and coin was only good if she was free to spend it. However, as the days stretched on and no one came to talk to her, she began to worry. What if they were only keeping her here till they could figure out what to do with her? Or what if they'd forgotten about her? Or worse, what if they already knew who she was? There was a certain loyalty found on the docks. An unspoken agreement to handle problems and disagreements within the community. To look the other way with some things, and to not ask too many questions with others. To not bring White Silver over the wall. Still, everyone had to make a living somehow, and being an informant paid well. Was that what they were doing? Making her sweat? Making her so desperate to get home and see her family that she would be willing to turn on them in exchange for her freedom? She had seen it done before. The slippery slope of trust. Just give us a few names, they would say. Whoever you can think of, and you can go home. There were dangerous men on the docks, just like there were dangerous men everywhere. How long would they have to keep her in this room before she would be willing to whisper those names? The image of Brekkus's body, swollen, bruised, and broken, stretched across Rita's table, slammed into her mind uninvited. A long fucking time. Rin spat through her teeth as tears stung her eyes. She knew how that dance would go. First, she would willingly give up the names of the dangerous men. Then, they would be back for the names of the bad men. And they would come again, and again. And again, till eventually she would run out of dangerous men and bad men and be forced to give up the names of the innocent. This was the path her mind had taken when the door to her cell opened on the third day and Bernora and Trevok walked into the room. Close the door, Bernora told Trevok before turning to a still sitting Rin and saying, We haven't got much time and you're in more trouble than you could possibly know. I can guess. Rin grumbled, pushing herself to her feet as Bernora's eyes cut into her. Do not waste my time interrupting or lying, she replied before reaching a finger up to tap the dragonfly pinned over her heart. Were you the girl in the inn? Rin froze, not sure what to say. Her eyes drifted around the room, looking for answers, stalling for time. She found Trevok standing just over Bernora's shoulder, staring at her with such intensity that it almost made her step back. Was he trying to guess her mind? Was he preparing to weigh the truthfulness of her words? Or was it something else? Was he trying to push the right answers to this test into her thoughts?
Answer me,
Brenora urged, glancing at the door. There was real urgency to the queen's voice now, a fear and frustration that was not entirely aimed at the prisoner in front of her.
Yes, Rin said, her tongue choosing honesty before her brain could tell her no.
Brenora's shoulders dropped, and Trevok threw his head back in quiet exasperation. Rin was not sure what was happening, but their faces scared her. She felt hope slipping that much further away, and it was fear and desperation that chose her next words.
And I regret it, she spat out.
Rin swallowed and started to fiddle with her bracelet, the rope and glass so worn and worthless that no one had bothered to take it from her.
I regret it. I did not know what it meant when I took it, and I did not know the pain it would cause, and I am sorry that I hurt you.
Rin took a breath and steadied her hands before looking into Brenora's eyes and placing one of the largest bets of her life.
But I would do it again, she said, fighting the tremor from her voice. I would do it again, and I would regret it, but I would do it again because it is what I needed to do to get the job done.
They stared at each other for a long moment, the queen and the thought thief. Then Brenora reached a decision. She gave Trevok a curt nod, and the wizard produced a stack of papers from his bag, handing them to Rin.
Sign these, Brenora commanded.
Rin glanced down at the papers in her hands. Contract of binding ran across the top.
No.
She threw the papers back at Brenora like they were made of snakes and paced backwards towards the cot.
No, 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 no.
Trevok and Brenora looked at each other, eyebrows and mouths twitching before turning back to Rin. Brenora leaned forward and pushed the contract under Rin's nose.
I don't know you, but I do know that you do not have the legal or official standing to survive what is about to walk through that door. If you sign these now, I can give you my protection.
Rin planted her feet and crossed her arms to glare at the woman standing across from her. She would not be scared into a decision like this. She would not be bullied. Pushing every ounce of fear and hate into her eyes, she replied,
Your protection, in exchange for my what? My servitude? My autonomy?
No, I will not be bound again.
Again, the word had been ripped from her throat. She had tried to keep it in. They had no right to that part of her story. But there it was, the ugly word, the admission of her mistakes and her past, lying bloody on the floor between them. Brenora gave Rin a quick up and down with her eyes.
How young? She asked.
How young was she when she made the biggest mistake of her life?
11, maybe 12. It does not matter, Rin replied in a quick staccato rhythm. I will not be signing those papers.
The glass bead of her bracelet seemed to burn into her wrist. She could almost see it melting her flesh.
I don't know what your situation was like before, but this here will give you real power, Brenora said, thumping the contract with her hand. As I rise, you rise. This will give you standing. This will give you a title. And most importantly, this will make it so they cannot just make you disappear. Because that is what the men coming through that door want to do, Rin. They want to wring every last bit of information out of you and get rid of you. I don't want that to happen. Trevok has made a very good case about why that shouldn't happen.
You did? Rin asked, pulling her eyes away from Brenora to look at the man at her side. He blushed and opened his mouth to say something, but Brenora pushed on.
Sign this now and be surprised later,
the Queen of Durrandir growled as she stepped forward and pushed a quill into Rin's hand. She was not lying to her. That much Rin knew for certain. Someone was coming through that door that was going to make Rin's life so painful that Brenora felt like she had to intervene. But this was a binding, and the thought of the word sent tremors of pain and revulsion coursing through Rin's body. This might give her protection, but it would take away her choices. This might give her a title, but she had no property to attach to that title, making it all but useless.
Amber Nora would be free to do whatever she wanted to her. Keep her as a pet, throw her out to sea, and there would be almost nothing Rin could do to stop her. She looked from Brenora's fierce emerald eyes back to Trevok's earnest gray gaze. He gave her a subtle nod, and that was it. Rin closed her eyes and signed her name, hating herself as she did.
Good,
Brenora said, snatching the papers out of Rin's hand and passing them back to Trevok.
What do we do now? You will need to mark her,
Trevok replied, shoving the papers into his bag and pulling out a piece of chalk, already getting to work drawing the circle and square for the ceremony ahead of them. Rin collapsed onto the cot, pushing her hands against the stone and the straw of the floor to keep her arms from shaking. A calm sort of nausea filled her head as she heard Brenora ask,
What do I use to mark her?
Your brooch will do, Rin heard herself answer from a great distance away.
She looked up to see Trevok nodding in agreement.
She is right. Make a cut on your palm and place the brooch in your hand. Make sure to cover it with your blood. Rin, would you please join us in the square?
She stepped forward, floating through her unease like a ship through fog. It had been in a room similar to this the last time she had partaken in this ceremony. Dark cellar, stone floor, candlelight, a man and his cane ready to promise her the world and give her fear and captivity instead. Brenora pulled a knife from her belt and slashed across her palm before placing the gold dragonfly against the cut. Now what? Trevok gave them both their lines, and Brenora and Rin faced each other. The queen let out a long breath, squared her shoulders, looked into Rin's eyes, and began,
I, Brenora Amethyst Stonebreaker, give you my full name and offer you the opportunity that comes through loyalty. You rise as I rise.
She extended her hand towards Rin, gold glinting through the red of her blood. Rin just stared down at the offer, trying not to be sick all over the stone at her feet.
Rin,
Trevok whispered in her ear,
do you need me to repeat?
No,
Rin hissed, snapping out of her trance and grabbing Brenora by the forearm.
I, Rin, Clara, Lafay, give you my full name and my loyalty, my body, and my will. I will go where you wish. I will do as you ask. Through my service may I learn. Through my fidelity may I grow. I rise as you rise.
The metal heard their words, and heat poured into the gold. Rin felt the searing of her flesh, the cracking and bubbling of her skin, as she promised herself to a woman she hoped could save her from the unknown threat hovering somewhere beyond the door. She bit her cheek to keep from screaming, in pain, in loss, in desperation. And then it was over. Brenora released her arm, and Rin sank to her knees, holding her elbows and staring down at the red and raw dragonfly shining above her wrist. No sooner than Brenora had stepped away, the door burst open, and Serafina and Varys strode into the room. Trevok pulled Rin to her feet as Serafina came to stand beside Brenora, and guards started to line the walls. Rin watched a look and a nod travel between the two women, and then Serafina was saying, in the loud voice of a woman determined to push her way past a fight,
Oh, there you are, Brenora! See, I told you we'd find her Lord Threnless.
Your Majesty,
came the whine of a cultured white-silver accent. A gray little man pushed his way past the guards at the door and into the small room. He was pale, which was a hard thing for anyone to achieve in white-silver, with pure white hair and sparkling eyes. We were supposed to be meeting in your rooms.
I know, but I had things to attend to here,
Brenora replied, straightening her back against the man's sneer.
Such as?
A binding.
A binding?
The man choked, head snapping to Rin.
Has she been marked?
Yes, I marked Rin just before the rest of you decided to join us. Lord Threnless sucked his teeth and glared at Brenora like she was a willful child who had just made themselves very inconvenient.
Well, How good is it that you thought ahead of a way to keep Lady Wren, was it, safely here in White Silver, where she belongs? His smile was a rosebush, all thorns and no sincerity. That is not going to be possible, I'm afraid, Brenora replied, not moving from her spot, not backing down. I'm leaving for Durrandir in a few days. My kingdom is needing and expecting me, and I will be needing my lady.
Your lady,
Thrick said, his words dripping with sarcasm, is a criminal and a liar. I can't speak for Rin's criminal history, but I am well aware of her talents. That is why I recruited her into my service, Brenora answered, without batting an eye. Rin had had enough. She wished she could walk out the door, but there were guards at the door, and Thrinless was flashing the grin of a man who had just been dealt a winning hand. Perhaps, but before we make any official decisions on Lady Wren's fate, we should talk to Lady Athena Pellinor Matrice.
Who?
Varys asked, as Thrick signaled to someone behind him, and Atea walked into the room. She looked entirely out of place in the tower dungeon. Her thick brown hair had been coiffed into an elegant braided bun. She wore a light pink, high-waisted robe, gathered just under her breast, the fabric pooling at her feet like she was a goddess descending to earth on a cloud. Gold circled her wrists and dangled from her ears, drawing attention to the life and glow of her skin. She was elegant and understated as she walked forward and dipped into a low curtsy. She stayed there for a moment, waiting for an acknowledgement that never came. Finally, she raised her head slowly, like a child peeking under the covers, and realized where she was.
I'm sorry, Atea said, brushing off her skirts. I thought I was having luncheon with the queen.
Yes, Brenora, Queen of Durrandir, Lord Thrinless replied, gesturing at Brenora.
Oh,
Atea said, eyes sweeping over Brenora and her well-worn boots, deep blue tunic, and practical riding pants.
Well, I suppose one queen is just as good as another.
The girl smiled, trying and failing to disguise her disappointment. Wren could not help it. She laughed. She was scared, bound, tired, possibly in the middle of an interrogation for crimes of treason, and Atea's poorly hidden chagrin was one of the funniest things she had seen in a long time. So she laughed. She tried to muffle the sound, to change it to a snort or something slightly more polite than the seagull-like cackle that was now erupting out of her. However, whenever Wren truly laughed, it was never a quiet thing. Atea's attention snapped to Wren. She looked at the woman she had hired to fix her mistakes, standing before her dressed in little more than a well-cut sack, and sneered,
I'm sorry. I do not believe I have had the pleasure.
Wren rolled her eyes and crossed her arms. Haven't you? She scoffed, before turning to Brenora and saying,
Of course she is going to say she doesn't know me. At best, she lost a priceless family heirloom. At worst, she's involved with the princess. I am sure you are very capable for someone of your station.
Atea interrupted with a smug smile of a teacher's favorite student.
But I know my peerage. White Silver has not had a princess to be involved with in the last 5 generations, and Durrandir currently does not have any heirs, at least of which I'm aware.
Oh, stop it, Wren groaned. I'm not getting charged with treason for the sake of keeping your secret. Now, you either tell these nice people you hired me, or I start telling them the details of why you hired me. Atea stared at Wren like someone had told her something so absurd she had to search her memory to make sure it was not true.
What would I have hired you for? I do not know you.
Wren's heart missed a beat. She was lying. Of course she was lying. She had to be lying. But there had been no shame in her eyes, no fear of embarrassment or reprisal, just confusion and a complete lack of recognition.
Fine, Wren snapped, holding her voice steady with a firm hand. I suppose I should start telling everyone about Grishan
and that saucy little picture he drew of you.
Well, now you are just making names up. Who on this side of the rift names a child Grishon?
Atea laughed. Rin's mouth went dry, and the world shifted around her. The hard stone felt too soft under her feet as she stumbled forward, reaching out to grab Atea. Two guards seized her roughly by the shoulders, bringing her up short.
You know me. Tell them you know me,
Rin commanded, pushing against the hands that held her back. Fear mixed with annoyance in the girl's eyes, but no memory stirred there. No acknowledgement.
I do not know you, and I do not know what is happening here,
she bit back, throwing up her hands as if to ward off a small but possibly dangerous dog. Turning to Thrinless, she said,
I demand you explain this to me.
Rin looked around the room, looked at Thrinless's upturned, scornful mouth, looked at the guards flanking the door and filling the hall, looked at Brenora's resigned and disappointed face.
She knows me,
Rin insisted in a pathetic whisper as the world closed in around her.
My apologies, Lady Athena. This meeting appears to have gotten away from me. Perhaps a tour of the royal grounds would calm your nerves,
the Lord said as he gently guided Atea back to the door, stopping to call over his shoulder.
Brenora, we will have to talk about this binding when I return.
I suppose we will, Brenora answered, voice heavy with acceptance.
No,
Rin thought, her only ally. Her only sliver of safety gone in an instant. And it made no sense. That was Atea. The Atea who had hired her. The Atea who had insisted on secrecy and then proceeded to sob loudly in plain view of the public. How could that girl be denying her so thoroughly now? A theory, a terrible theory, bloomed to life in Ren's mind. A theory that would explain everything. And that Rin could not accept.
No, Rin breathed in a voice that only she could hear. It cannot be him.
Only one way to know for sure, whispered something terrifying in her mind as it stroked down her spine with pointed claws. Say it. Say the words. Atea was almost to the door now, Rin's salvation slowly disappearing from sight. Better do it now. Say it, urged the voice.
Ma'am, if you could come over here,
one of the guards said, pushing her back towards the wall. Last chance.
Little Rin wants to fly home,
Rin yelled out, and Atea stopped in her tracks. She turned, slowly, like she was enjoying the pressure of the ground beneath her slipper, the feel of Rin's eyes on her back, and began to walk back into the room. And Rin knew, in that horrible instant, that she had been right. All she had to do was look at Atea's face, eyes like a spider that was so sure they'd caught their prey. Her prancing walk was gone, replaced by the swagger of a man who was used to walking with a cane he did not need. Rin could see him there, in the knowing curve of Atea's lips. Someone else was in the girl's head now.
Hello, little Rin,
the girl said in a voice that did not belong to her. The cultivated, white-silver wine was gone, replaced with a cultured purr that sounded like velvet and felt like a knife in Rin's gut.
Nazelle,
she whispered, testing the name on her lips. For years she had refused to say it out loud, irrationally fearing that if she did, he would somehow be able to hear her. Somehow be able to find her. But it was too late now for fear when the threat was standing in front of her. Atea's face pulled into a slow smile of acknowledgement.
This is just a message. I will not be able to respond to you.
Rin's skin started to tingle as her mind pulled away from her body. She felt like she was floating, like she was just a pair of ears hovering over the floor. She and the world faded away, and the only thing left was that voice.
I left you this little note in case we missed each other in Altair. I told Lithril to keep an eye out for you, and she assured me she would, but, well, She is a fine girl, but she has a tendency to get excited and miss the big picture.
Nazelle had sent her to Altair. Nazelle had hired her. How long had this taken? How long had he spent with this girl? How many hours had he spent crafting and rewriting memories till they looked and felt real? Just so he could send Ren to Altair. Just so he could give her this message. How long had he been watching her?
I know you are just as eager as I to see each other again. So do not fret. If we do not get a chance to catch up in Altair, I'll just take the liberty of coming to call on you.
Do not worry about keeping me waiting. I've been waiting for years to speak with you again. What's a few more hours? Besides, I'm sure Rita will be kind enough to keep me company.
You have been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. And if you want to continue listening, that option is now available to you. Thought Thief is now available as an audiobook for free to all patron subscribers, as well as for purchase on all major listening platforms. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook. Links to where you can purchase all of these things can be found in the episode description below and on my website, kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help from Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.